I know firsthand how exhausting it can be to manage all the tasks in my reselling business, like listing, bookkeeping, and more, but I found a solution that has given me back my time and allowed me to grow my business, hiring a virtual assistant. And now I want to share that solution with you. That's why I've created an online course called Hiring a Virtual Assistant for Your Reselling Business. With this course, you'll learn everything you need to know to find, train, and manage a virtual assistant like a pro. And because I want to make this course accessible to everyone, I'm offering a special coupon code, FLIPTHESCRIPT, that gives you $10 off at checkout. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your reselling business to the next level. Sign up now at hiringava.com and let's enjoy the freedom and fun of growing our businesses together. Again, you can sign up at hiringava.com. Welcome to the Flip the Script podcast. I'm your host, Denali, and I'm a full-time reseller on eBay and Poshmark. My store and closet name is El Ducho, E-L-D-U-C-H-O, and you can find me on Instagram and YouTube as El Ducho Thrift. I'm very excited about this week's guest. I had the opportunity to interview a friend, and her name is Shannon. You can find Shannon on Instagram under the username Boho Dreams Closet, and on Poshmark under the username Boho_dreams, and all of this information will be in the show notes for you. Shannon is a full-time reseller living in Austin, Texas. These past few years, Shannon graduated from college and decided that she wanted to resell full-time. She's grown her business from her home and now has most recently gotten an office space with a fellow reseller who's been on this podcast. But without further ado, let's get into the episode. Hi, Shannon. Thanks for being on the podcast with me.
Hi, Denali. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
I am so excited to have you on here. I feel like you and I have interacted a lot on social media. And as we were just reminiscing about a second ago, we met at PoshFest 2019. But we haven't had the opportunity to have like a conversation.
No, we haven't. And I'm so excited. We briefly got to meet and it was kind of a dream come true for me, not gonna lie.
I paid her to say that, guys.
I'm so excited for this.
Me too. Well, okay. Well, without further ado, I want to jump into it because I want to know all the things about you, Shannon. So my first question for you is, how and when did you first start reselling?
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, my entire life, my mom has taught me to run straight to the sales rack. So I have been a deals finder forever. But I didn't really get into thrifting until I was a senior in high school. So that would have been 2014. And there was this big trend going around. Everybody really wanted to wear what we called grandpa sweaters. So they were men's, like large, extra large, chunky knits. Mm-hmm. And so the only place to find that was Goodwill. So I would buy those. And then at that time, I was selling my personal clothes on Poshmark. So I remember selling one grandpa sweater out of my own closet. And I think I paid like $5 for it. And I sold it for $30 in like a day. And wow. I just remember like getting that bug of like, oh my gosh, this is real. I can do this. And so from then on, I kind of slowly started to buy more of those sweaters purposely to resell. Very, very small thing. I probably bought like five, no big deal. And at the same time, I gained an obsession with this cult brand called Brandy Melville. I'm sure you've heard of it. Yep. but it's very common for like teenagers to really get into this brand. And so I met this other girl on Poshmark that was also very into it. And she came to me one day and said, hey, I see you have all of these sweaters. Have you seen this trend? If you know how to sew, you could totally do it. And so it was this trend that was going around that you would cut a V basically in the front of a top, a dress, a sweater, whatever, and then sew grommet trim down both sides and then put lacing through it. Mm. So this trend was started by LF, I believe. And they were selling them for like $250, something insane. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I could totally do this. So I started doing that, and I started an Etsy shop, and that was in 2015. At the same time as I started this Etsy shop with my own reworked clothing, Poshmark Wholesale launched. So I kind of jumped onto that because I wanted to kind of get a feel for everything. Quickly realized that wasn't worth my time. And then about a year into my Etsy shop, I had been buying these pieces to flip, to alter, and realizing that I was finding other brands at Goodwill that were great. And mainly it was Free People, still my obsession, still the main thing that I sell. And you know, I was like, this is $3, this retailed for $100. What is happening? So I would kind of slowly pick those things up. And then about a year into Etsy, I got actually really like physically sick because I was so stressed out. And that would be my sophomore year of college at this point. Mm-hmm. So I was so stressed out between my full schedule at college and then running this business. And so I decided to stop Etsy and stop altering my clothes and instead just jump right into just full on reselling. But I ran into the issue of I went to Texas A&M University. There were only two tiny little Goodwills in this town and they were terrible and it was just bad. So then I went to Plato's Closet. And I remember finding a Free People top that was like $15. And I was like, oh, $15. Like, I can't do anything with this. And then I left and then I regretted it so hard. And I was like, I totally could have sold that. And it's just kind of history from there. Now I'm willing to pay up, obviously, and have found a way to make it work.
Okay. This is a journey. I like everything you said. I was like, okay, wait, remember that she just said that because you want to ask her about that. Okay. So
it's a lot.
Yeah. So you first started selling in 2015. You said 5 years ago.
Yes.
Okay. Got it. And at that time you were like, it was maybe like your senior year of high school.
Yeah. So it was senior year of high school to freshman year of college.
Gotcha. And okay. So the first platform that you sold on was Poshmark, right?
Yes. Initially, I began on there actually in 2014, but I was only selling my own like personal closet clothes.
Okay. Got it. So you were just selling stuff from home. And I'm guessing that you probably weren't like marking stuff up a lot. It was probably just to clear stuff out.
Yeah. I'm the person that people are now sourcing from.
I was that person. We love that kind.
Yeah.
We need you.
Yes.
But it wasn't until the grandpa sweaters that it kind of, that you thought, oh, I could make some money doing this? Or?
Yeah, that was the initial thing, but obviously those aren't an infinite supply.
Right.
So it was kind of like maybe one day. But I think finding the Free People for $3 really just kind of mm-hmm. took off for me.
Right. Okay. But then after that, you mentioned there was like the Brandy Melville thing. Now, who told you to do this? Who was this person?
So it's really funny. So, you know, I'm on Poshmark selling my personal stuff. And then I'm also like buying all of this Brandy Melville clothing. And basically, I just met this girl who I can't remember if either she had bought Brandy Melville from me or I had bought it from her. But then we just kind of formed this like little internet friendship. And then she just randomly messaged me one day and was like, hey, you should do this.
That's so funny.
So I owe everything to her.
I know. Where I feel like you need to look her up. Are you still in contact with her?
No, I'm not. And I can't remember her username to save my life.
It makes me really sad. You got to scroll through all your transactions now, Shannon.
Yeah. I have to go back to 5 years ago.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Well, random side note. So this is one thing I was like, oh, I have to, even though this podcast is not about me, I'm just going to say it anyways. Probably around the same time or a little bit earlier, I had discovered Brandy Melville also and totally mm-hmm. fell in love with a lot of the early stuff that they put out. I mean, I don't know what it looks like now, to be honest with you, but about like 5 or 6 years ago, right? And I, even though I don't wear the pieces that I bought back then, I've kept them. I don't know why, but I feel like they're like collectibles. Like Brandy Melville collectibles.
The stuff that they make now is not nearly as good as the stuff that they used to make. So I totally understand.
Yeah.
That.
I was like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, or I feel like the stuff that I purchased back then probably wasn't as mass produced as it is now.
Yeah, it was actually a lot more like valuable and rare.
Yeah.
And I definitely understand what you're saying, because when I go to the thrift store now, I will not pick that brand up. Mm-hmm. But if I find one of their older pieces, I can't bring myself to leave it.
Right. Right. Exactly. I know. I should like comp the stuff that I have, because I'm like, man, I wonder if it's worth anything. Okay. Anyways.
It could be.
I know. Now you got me thinking about it. Maybe I shouldn't hoard it. Okay. So you mentioned the wholesale market on Poshmark. Now, were you thinking with the pieces that you were altering and creating and selling on Etsy, were you thinking of wholesaling them on Poshmark?
No. So I was actually just like buying stuff from the wholesale market. So this was back whenever Poshmark very, very beginning launched wholesale. Mm-hmm. And there was only like five, I guess, what would you call them, brands, mm-hmm. On there that you could buy from. And so it was like, I don't know if you were on it at this time, but it was like Senahara Jewelry, T&J Designs. It was mostly jewelry. Okay. And so I was buying stuff from these brands to resell.
And so how did that go?
It went okay for a bit. And then slowly but surely, these brands' products became less and less quality. Mm-hmm. And I would receive things that were broken. And I had cases opened up against me because these pieces weren't of great value or quality. Mm-hmm. And then Poshmark would approve the case, and I'm like, well, you approved this brand to be on the platform. Yeah. So it was kind of a mess. I think things have gotten a lot better since then, though, I will say.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Okay, so you did that. You had your Etsy store. You're in college during this time. You said at one point during your sophomore year, you kind of just were getting maybe overworked with school and selling. So
to kind of put it in perspective with these pieces that I was altering, I would have them, basically, I would make one. And then I would sell them in every size. So they were kind of essentially like pre-order. Mm-hmm. So somebody would place the order and then I would make it. So say I have three tests 1 week, but I get an order. Well, that order has to go out within that mm-hmm. week. And I was getting, you know, at least one order a day, usually up to like five orders a day. So it was just like way too much for just me, because of the time that I had to put into the items, along with, you know, a 15-hour course load.
Right. Yeah, that's a tough thing that I've heard about with people who have sold on Etsy as just kind of like a side hustle or a passion project almost in a way, is that you kind of just have to love doing it, because it's so time consuming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And arguably, the labor that you're putting into creating something, you know, is probably the time worked probably doesn't even equal the value of what you're selling, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it was really a difficult decision for me, because at the end of the day, my profit margin was quite great. Mm-hmm. But it was almost a decision of, I can do school and do this, or I can do school and be a college student and try and enjoy myself while I know I can.
Right.
So that was a tough choice, mm-hmm. but you know, I got myself to a good place in the end.
Yeah. Definitely focus on school. Stay in school, everybody. Okay. So when did you officially, like, what time period, like what year are we talking about that you were like, you were going to the Goodwills and thinking, you know, you're seeing this Free People and all these items that you can sell? When did it kind of kick in? Like, wait a minute, maybe I can make money doing this, some serious money.
Yeah. So I would say that would probably have been 2016.
Okay. And you had mentioned that you saw that $15 item, and that was like at what, a buy sell trade store?
Yeah. So that was at a buy sell trade. And I just remember thinking like, okay, well, this is cute. I know it retails for a lot, but I don't know if I can sell mm-hmm. it to make a decent enough profit for $15 being a good price. And then I left it. And then I, you know, for the next like week, I was like, why didn't I buy it? So I went back to the same store and just kind of went for it and just bought some mm-hmm. stuff, and then quickly realized that it was cheap enough and it would be okay. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of sparked from there and took off.
Okay. So when that happened, you know, what platform did you go to sell on? Was this Poshmark still?
Yeah, so that was primarily Poshmark at that time. I didn't really branch out from Poshmark until, I would say, probably like a year later.
Okay. And so, again, you're saying that 2016 was around when you thought to start selling more. You're in college at that point. What year do you graduate from college?
2019.
So you graduate from college. What was your degree? Just curious.
Economics.
Okay, which is just like reselling. Actually, it is just like reselling.
Yeah, it is. I got a lot of
yeah, you did. I love that. So you graduate college, and I mean, were you, you know, what were you thinking at that point? Were you thinking, you know, okay, I'm gonna go apply for jobs using this degree that I got? Or at that point, are you thinking, forget this degree, I'm gonna resell full time?
Yeah, so that was a huge turning point in all of this for me. So I graduated in May of 2019, and the job market was good at that mm-hmm. time. And, you know, I was like, okay, so a little bit of backstory. I grew up with two parents that are both realtors. So they're both self-employed, mm-hmm. And they didn't really want me to do that because they wanted me to have benefits and a steady salary and all of the lovely things that come with a corporate job. And I totally appreciate them for that. But so I never really considered it to be an option. And I also just didn't really take myself very seriously at the time. Mm-hmm. So I did the thing. I was applying to jobs. I was on Indeed every day. Mm-hmm. You know, in the middle of class when I should have been paying attention, I'm applying to jobs. And I just kind of realized there wasn't really anything out there that I was excited about or that made enough money mm-hmm. to be worth my time. And so then, you know, I went through a few interview processes. And then it got towards the end when I was like, okay, I'm graduating in like 3 weeks. What am I about to do with mm-hmm. my life? And I just realized, well, I make a livable salary. I make a good salary. I love my job and I already know I'm good at it. Why can't I just do this? And it probably took me another, like, really like another month to be like, okay, I can actually just mm-hmm. do this. Because it didn't seem like a realistic option at the time. And I'm so glad that I did it, obviously. But it was very difficult to come out of such a, you know, especially a degree like mm-hmm. economics, you have a path that you're expected to go down. And if you don't go down it, it's just kind of like, what are you doing? Right. Why did you just waste 4 years and $20,000? But yeah, so that was the main reason that I'm even doing any of this, is just because college gave me that push of, well, you have to make a decision now. You can't sit on your butt.
Right. You know, and just thinking about your parents, and you said that they're realtors and they've been, you know, it's kind of like self-employed work in a way, right? Mm-hmm. It can be unpredictable income, right? Mm-hmm. You know, what was the reaction, I guess, from friends and family when you told them, like, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to resell full time.
Yeah. So, it was kind of funny. So my friends and my boyfriend at the time, who's still with me, all way before I ever even considered it, were just like, what are you mm-hmm. thinking? Why don't you just mm-hmm. do this? Like, why are you not thinking of this as an option? And my mom was still kind of pushing for a corporate job. But as soon as I kind of sat down and was just like, I want to be happy. I don't want to, you know, do any of these things. And I know I can do this. And I chose the safe route. I decided to, my brother lives up in Portland mm-hmm. and I've always wanted to go live somewhere up there. So I'm very jealous. and so I was like dead set on moving there, but I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to be responsible. I'm going to stay close to home. I'll move to Austin, which is only about 3 hours away from them, and I'll see if I can make it work. And then I'll take a big leap after that. So, you know, I got a very positive response from my family just because they saw how much I thought it through. Mm-hmm. And I think it's always kind of helped as well that I do have a degree. So if something were to happen, I have something to fall back on. But everybody has been extremely supportive, and I'm so incredibly grateful for that. I guess I didn't really know if that would happen mm-hmm. or not. And I will say that I think that's a big part of being successful in all of this, is having a great support system.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, because I think that, I don't know if you've had any of these interactions with people, but I've had interactions with people in the reselling community who will tell me that they don't have support from friends or family in what they're doing, and how it's hard, you know, because this is very self-motivated work. And to, you know, if you don't, you know, to anybody listening right now, if you don't have people who are supportive of you, it makes it that much harder, because you're like, you know, these people don't think that this is viable income, or these people don't believe in the work that I'm doing. And so, yeah, it can be hard. So we're sending our love to you.
Yeah. Yes, we are. Yeah. And I mean, it's hard if other people don't take you seriously. It's hard to take yourself seriously and your business seriously. And if you can't do those things, then it's basically impossible. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day.
Yeah, but I agree with you. So, okay. So how has your business grown since, you know, graduating college and starting this full-time reselling business? You know, you mentioned Poshmark, you've sold on Etsy. Do you sell anywhere else now?
Yeah. So I'm actually on several platforms at this point. Poshmark is consistent mm-hmm. for me. It's where I put everything. I would say my next biggest platform, which is somewhat recent in the last 6 months, is Instagram, mm-hmm. actually, which is not a reselling platform. But I have started going live and doing live sales once mm-hmm. a week. And that is a huge part of my income at this point, as well as I put all of my new arrivals on Instagram before I put them anywhere else. So I would say Poshmark and Instagram have kind of equaled out at this point. And then beyond that, I do cross list some to Mercari. Mm-hmm. I have probably like 4 listings on eBay. eBay really scares me. Denali, I need you to make a course on eBay.
We'll talk after this. Don't worry.
Okay. And then I'm trying to convince myself to get more into it. It's kind of like my boogeyman. But and then I have my own website where I've recently started to put new arrivals on there as well. And then I have things with ThredUp. With you guys listening, you know all of the changes mm-hmm. that's happened. I'm not sending anything else to them. And then my boyfriend and I actually, we flip furniture together on Facebook Marketplace. That's kind of a little side hustle. But that's kind of the only thing that I put on Facebook Marketplace.
Okay, cool. Okay. I have so many questions. Okay. So let's talk about Instagram, because I know so many people are curious about Instagram selling, and, you know, you were like, it's not a selling platform, but, you know, in my head, I was like, it's, you know, in some ways it's becoming one, because so many people, yes. I mean, you know, of all sorts of different businesses are selling on there, and they've got that shop function and everything now. I've seen your lives. I've seen that you go live and selling on there, which is, I think, really cool. So I guess, how did you get started? What made you, you know, what motivated you to start selling on Instagram? And what do you do that you feel like works for you for selling on there? I know that's a lot of questions, yeah. So answer it as you wish.
Okay. So it all started because I initially just started following a few girls. And then I actually formed a friendship with one of them. And she, I guess, so it's kind of complicated, but I reached out to her. Her name is Carly, and I was like, hey, this at this point, I was trying to start a YouTube mm-hmm. channel. And I was like, hey, I want to pick your brain. I know that you're curious about what I do as well on Poshmark and whatnot. Would you be open to having a discussion where you talk about what you do and I talk about what I do and I'll put it mm-hmm. on YouTube? And she was like, oh, absolutely. And then she was living in Arizona at the time. And she was like, oh, wait, hey, I'm actually coming to Texas because that's where she's originally from. Why don't we just do this mm-hmm. in person? And I was like, oh, yes, absolutely. Sounds great. And then she came and visited us in Austin. And I actually did a live with her. So I went live on her Instagram with her and we sold things. And so that was kind of the like initial like, wow, there's so much money mm-hmm. in this. How did I not do this earlier? So that's how I started. And then what I would say, what I found works best for me, kind of my routine with Instagram is I'll do live sales every Thursday, as I mentioned earlier. So actually while we're recording this, I have one tonight.
thank you for recording with me.
Yes, absolutely. So I'll go on at the same time every Thursday night. And what I'll do is I'll post a preview and my stories of what's going to be in the live and then post countdowns so people don't mm-hmm. miss it. And then basically you just go live, people join, and then you it's kind of silly to like explain it, but you just hold up whatever in front of the camera and say, this is what it is, this is what size it is, and this is how much mm-hmm. it costs. And then somebody will comment and say, I want it. And then they'll go pay mm-hmm. you for it. And then you ship it. So it's very simple, on that end. And it's actually kind of the quickest turnaround you could possibly get because you don't have to take right. photos. You don't have to do anything. And then, so whatever doesn't sell on the lives, I will then, I try to model all of my clothes. So then I'll take model photos of everything and put them in my stories. So what I do is I'll, you know, say I have like a Free People dress, I'll put the picture in my story and then I'll put Free People and then like 45 shift. Mm-hmm. And then people can DM me to claim it. And then, so that is kind of the majority of what I do on Instagram. I'll do like random lives as well. Just kind of like, oh, I just got back from the thrift store. This is what I got. You can snag it now if you want it. And then I kind of try to offer lower prices than will ever be available again, I guess you could say. Just to kind of give people a reason to want to come and shop on my Instagram.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, pricing would be the big question that I would, you know, be curious about with selling on Instagram. So when you do your lives, you know, there's some prep work that goes into it before you go live, I imagine. You know, you're not, I'm guessing, coming up with prices mm-hmm. in the moment. You've probably priced everything out before you go live.
So yes and no, it kind of depends. So this is where the background of 90% of what I sell mm-hmm. is Free People. So if it's not Free People, I will know what I'm going to price it for, just because then I kind of need to mm-hmm. look it up and look at the brand. But if it's Free People, I kind of have across the board pricing with everything. So, you know, typically my sweaters are like 58, my dresses are 48, mm-hmm. my tops are 28. So it's pretty easy for me to just kind of last minute do it. But that is only because I've been selling Free People for like 5 years and nothing else.
Okay. So with that, while people are watching the live, are they actively commenting sold, or do people just DM you, like the first person to DM you after the live wins? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So there's a comment section on the live, and what I do, is, so first I will pin mm-hmm. a comment that has all of my payment mm-hmm. info. And then, so that's always at the bottom of the comment section, and then they can comment. And whenever I hold up an item and I say the price, they'll comment me. And, so like, say it's a Free People dress. So they'll comment me Free mm-hmm. People dress. And then what I do if one other person or however many other people also try to claim the item within a reasonable time frame, you know, within like 60 yeah. seconds, then I will let them bid on it. So this is another way that you can go about it is you can mm-hmm. do bids. So in this case, say it was $48, I would say, okay, well, Montana has it for mm-hmm. 48. But if you want to outbid her, just comment 49. I'll give you guys 30 seconds to place your bids. Whoever has the highest bid at mm-hmm. the end gets it. And so if you want to just do a bid, then you could hold up the item, say bid starts at $20, mm-hmm. go. And then people will just start commenting.
Gotcha. Bids. So do you, I mean, like how common or uncommon is a bidding war?
It's fairly common. I would say that you're going to have, on, if you're not doing bids, unless more than one person claims, I would say that you're going to have at least like two or three, per okay. life, just depending on how many items you're pushing.
Gotcha.
Through.
So interesting. Okay. So then when it comes time for payment, you know, how do you accept payment? Are you invoicing people through PayPal? Do you do Venmo? What works for you?
Yeah. So I take, Cash App and mm-hmm. Venmo. And that's kind of mm-hmm. it for now. However, you know, if people have issues with that, I do offer listing it on my website and then they can obviously go through and, enter their card information mm-hmm. manually, and that sort of thing. But primarily, I would say the largest platform that I accept is Cash App. And that one is mainly just because it's like the safest and most like business yeah, friendly.
I agree. And no fees. We yes. love a no fee payment system.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So in terms of starting this, if somebody's like, I want to start selling on Instagram, but I don't have a following, you know, what tips or recommendations would you give to somebody for going about this?
Yeah. So,
I mean, because let me ask this maybe a different way. Are you finding, because I don't know the evolution of your Instagram account. I don't, you know, I'm assuming your account started as a reseller Instagram account in terms of
yes.
trying to connect with the community. You know, are the people that you're selling to now, are they resellers or how are other non-resellers finding you?
Yeah. So that's kind of the thing that happened with me with Carly. That helped me mm-hmm. a lot. I was on her page. She had a huge mass following. So they all saw me, they all saw the items that I had. So I got very, very lucky in that sense. A few of the things that you can do, people will offer paid shout outs. So you pay them like $5 and then they will give you a shout out on their page. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously you want to do this with people that have a following that you're mm-hmm. trying to target. And then another side to Instagram reselling that I don't really mm-hmm. partake in, but this is how most people start, is you do a drop on your feed. Uh-huh. Yeah. So you would have 10 items that are like similar of a similar theme. And then you say, okay, Tuesday at 5 p.m., I'll be dropping these 10 items and they'll be up for bid on my feed. And then you post the actual photo, the description, and then where the bid starts and then what your buy mm-hmm. now price is. And that's where most people start just because it is kind of harder to get people directly mm-hmm. on a live. However, I will say, as in any business, anything, building relationships is incredibly, incredibly important. So if you can build relationships with other people doing this, then they will shout you out. You shout them out. It's, you know, you scratch my back, mm-hmm. I scratch yours. And that will help you so much. So it's really not that different or that difficult. You just have to, you know, be kind, be aware, and be involved.
Ooh, I like
say.
That. Put that on a t-shirt. Be kind, be aware, and be involved. That's like, put on a bumper sticker, a t-shirt. I like it. That's good. Would you say, like, in terms of people discovering, like, thinking about those drops, because I've seen people do that before, do you think that, like, using hashtags and stuff like that is really important for people to find, like, brands or, you know, like, for people who are searching for stuff to even sell, like, or purchase on Instagram?
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, hashtags are always so incredibly important. It can kill or save your post, mm-hmm. I would say. But yeah, if based on what you're selling, obviously don't put random right. hashtags in it that don't have anything yeah. to do with it. But definitely utilize those and utilize as many as you possibly can, even in those drop posts, mm-hmm. I would say. And then that also, you know, one way to really make those successful is the advertisement before. So make sure you're posting about it in your stories. Maybe post a picture on your feed of all of the items together and say, you know, all of these will be dropping. And then another way that you can get attention is to create mm-hmm. a countdown and then say, hey, if you share this countdown to your stories, I will give you a mm-hmm. shout out, or you'll be entered to win $3 off any item or something like that. That's also a strategy that a lot of people utilize and helps you get a lot of exposure for free,
yeah, basically. No, those are great tips. Okay. Okay. So your other platforms that you sell on, Instagram has now kind of started to rival Poshmark, which is super awesome. You said you are cross-listing some items to Mercari. You've got four mm-hmm. items on eBay. I love the specific four.
It's sad. It's
you
true.
Know, for you, like, when did you think, like, at what point did you feel like I need to put stuff on other platforms, and why?
Yeah, so that was, I would say that is a reseller community influential mm-hmm. thing. You know, I got on Instagram and I started following all of these people and seeing that they were moving things that I was like, I could never mm-hmm. move that. And I was like, how are you doing this? And then I see that they're doing it on other platforms. So then I kind of started to do my research. And that's where Mercari came along. And I realized that they can be better for more like oversaturated things on Poshmark. So like Lululemon and like mm-hmm. things like that. But I would say that it was almost like FOMO. You know, I was like, all of these people can sell these things. Why can't I? Let me figure it out. Because right. it's frustrating. But even with the cross listing, it's a very small portion of right. what I do. Because they don't do it yeah. very heavily.
Yeah, but in some ways, like, if we think about you being multi-platform, and I know that Instagram is not a traditional one, but it is, right? I mean, like, for you, it is. Like, that is another platform yes. for you. How important do you think it is if somebody wants to be a full-time reseller? Like, how important do you think being multi-platform is?
Oh, I think it's incredibly important. And one big reason for that is because whenever you are on Poshmark, there's, I don't even know how many other people on there now selling similar things. And, you know, if you list something, everybody knows whenever it goes into the just in category, that's kind of the like golden hour of right. reselling. Like that's when it's going to get the most exposure. That's when it's most important. And then a month later, if it's just been sitting there and you don't get to share very consistently, then obviously it's not going to get in front of a lot of eyes. And they're probably most likely the same exact thing in the just in category pretty mm-hmm. consistently or something similar enough. So unless somebody is searching for your specific item, it's just kind of going to sit right. and you don't want that. So you know, like my strategy would be to put everything mm-hmm. on Poshmark, see how it goes, and then start cross-listing if it doesn't sell within X amount of days mm-hmm. on Poshmark. And then, you know, kind of go from there to whatever platform you think it would mm-hmm. fit best.
Okay. And then thinking about Facebook Marketplace, excuse me, you said that you're selling furniture on there, which that's really cool. How did that start?
Yeah. So I actually used to do it myself. And I don't even remember the first piece that I flipped. But I was looking at buying a new car. And it, you know, was my first big girl purchase. And I was like, okay, well, I'm driving this tiny little Chevy Cruze. I really want something larger, but I need to have a reason for it. You know, like I need to make it worth my time. So I was like, well, you know, I flipped a few pieces of furniture. I hadn't really thought about it being like something that I'm consistently doing, but it would justify me getting a larger vehicle. And if I can make enough money to pay, well, so if I got a new car, it would also mean I started paying my car insurance because my mom was still paying it on my old car. So I was like, okay, well, I just have to make enough to pay my car insurance, which is like $150 a month or something. So that kind of drove me to do it more and more. And it ended up being something just really fun. And now it's something that I can do with Alan. And, you know, he helps me. He kind of deals with customers. And now I'm not, you know, alone whenever I'm making these transactions with strangers. So if you are selling on Facebook Marketplace, please be careful. But yeah, it was something that I very much just stumbled upon. And it was all because I had a thrift store right down the street from my house that happened to get really awesome furniture. And I also just live in a great city for it. But there's a lot of money in it if you ever find a piece of
cool furniture. I totally agree with you. Like I, you know, often shop at the Goodwill outlet, and my outlet does sell furniture there. And whenever I see it, I'm like, oh man, like I don't really have a car for like taking stuff, you know what I mean? But I'm always like, man, if I had a truck, you know, like this is, you know, sometimes I'll see like, I remember one time I saw those, like those tall outdoor heaters, you know, like sometimes that they have at restaurants or in rich people's backyards. So I saw one there and I was like, this thing would probably sell for, I don't know, probably a couple hundred, right? Like, you know, it was like one of the nice ones, but you know, I'm like, yeah, that's not gonna fit my Subaru.
Well, yes, so that's the not fun part about the bins is you have to take it immediately. But if you buy it from like a typical thrift store, usually they'll give you like 3 days or so. So you could like borrow a friend's truck, or I mean, if it's really worth it, like rent a U-Haul or something. But also I did want to say I'm very incredibly jealous of your bins because they look magical and mine are so dirty.
I promise they, you know, it varies. Let me just be honest. There's a couple in Western Washington and they're like night and day, but the one that's close to my house, my friend Steven refers to it as business class because it's pretty darn clean there. Like I always say, you can use the bathroom and feel good about your life. So
yes, I heard you talking about that on another podcast, and I was like, I would never get near the restrooms.
It's pretty good. I'm not going to lie. Well, I wanted to ask you about, I have so many questions still to ask you, but I did want to ask you about something that you touched on, which is that you sell a lot of Free People, which I think is really cool. I gather that you must like the brand. You love it.
I love it.
Why the emphasis there? Is it just because like you relate to it as a shopper, like you feel like it's your brand? Do you feel like it's limiting selling only one brand? And also, I know I'm asking you like six questions here, but like, you know, there's some people who would say, I'm not one of them, but I know that there's some people who say like, Free People doesn't sell for me, you know, or I can't move it to save my life.
Yeah, so I hear that a lot. So I would say that it all began because my mom loved it. And she still to this day will not like spend a bunch of money on clothes. She just thinks it's silly. But she's absolutely in love with Free People. And she would take me to the store and I loved it too. And we would go look at things and just be like, okay, well, we're never going to pay $200 for a t-shirt.
Right.
Sorry, not gonna happen. So I think I kind of stumbled into it, I would say, because I was very, very familiar with it because of my mom and I knew what it retailed for. So it was something that I was familiar with. I didn't have to do a lot of research or put a lot of thought into it. So that was kind of, I would say, how I started and how I got into it. Another big reason is because it is what fills my personal closet. I love the brand myself and I love wearing it. As well as it's very, I would call it almost like size versatile. You know, I've picked up on a lot of things that are a size extra small, but they could fit up to an extra large without, you know, any hesitation or thought. So it has kind of helped in that sense, because then I'm not having to scour through the entire thrift store to find things that can fit everyone. So that helps a lot. I wouldn't say that it is limiting to me, just because, I mean, so, I mean, obviously it's going to be in some senses. I can't really move more like professional mature clothing because it doesn't fit in a closet of 1300 Free People items. But it is what I come across the most. So that is super helpful to me. But I wouldn't really say that it limits me in any way. The only issue is just trying to move the designer items in the midst of all of it. And I've actually been in talks with my office roommate, Ashley, about starting a Poshmark closet between the two of us to just move the designer items. And then also I need to get over my fear of eBay and put them on there. So I think everything that it's kind of limited me on, there is a solution that's quite easy. And then you had another question that I cannot remember.
I don't know that I remember either, but because I think you answered a lot of them really well. I mean, I think the answer to it in general is that you're passionate and excited about the brand, and that's why it works really well for you.
Yes.
Which I think is great. I wish that I had one brand that I felt that way about, but I don't.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, and also thinking about what you said about it being kind of, about the sizing, I think it is, you know, it's like obviously a kind of like a I don't want to say a joke, but a joke in the reseller community, right? That it's just like an extra small is also an extra large.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But that is kind of nice about the brand. Do you ever feel like that's a problem with the brand when you're trying to sell stuff?
So I would say that the only problem that it causes, is just that it almost makes me seem less size inclusive, because the tags say something very different than what they are. And because of that, it is very difficult to find large and extra large pieces in Free People because people aren't buying them. Because even if they normally wear large, extra large, they're buying a small, medium. And I haven't really ran into any real issues with that, but that is the only thing that concerns me, is just it seeming like I don't have that option for people. And I actually, because of this, whenever I post new arrivals in my stories, I do not put sizes in them, purely because I don't want people to see extra small and think there's no way this is ever going to fit me. I actually let people message me and ask me what size they are, so I can say, oh, it's an extra small. However, it can fit up to a large. So that's kind of my way around that.
No, that's actually really smart, because I wear usually a large or an extra large, but I can fit in an extra small in Free People. They make me feel me feel really good about my life when I try on Free People.
Same.
Okay.
And it makes modeling really easy.
Right, because everything's so universal. Okay, well, you know, you kind of mentioned your office space and your co-office owner. I'm like, what would it be? Co-lessee. Ashley, who's been on the podcast. Shout out to that episode.
Yes, everybody should listen. Love to Ashley. Them.
Yes, love Ashley. So tell me about your workspace, and how did the idea of getting an office come together, and, you know, how has it benefited your business?
Yeah. So I was working out of a room in my home, and that worked for a while, quickly outgrew it. So around, I would say, like January to February, I kind of started mentioning to Ashley, who's also a full-time reseller, that I needed a space. I needed to get out of my office, or out of my house. And I'd been looking at office spaces, and it just wasn't practical to do by myself. And I was like, if you would be interested in this, please let me know. Let's go look at some spaces. Let's make this happen. And she was like, absolutely. And then COVID happened.
Right.
So we kind of tabled it for a while because both of us were like, well, we have no idea how this is going to affect our business. We have no idea if we're even going to have a business in a month. So, you know, let's put that on the back burner. And then actually, I was at her house for Pash Fest. She and I were watching together and we were just talking. And at this point in time, we had emailed a few like Craigslist ads, like, hey, is this, you know, is this still a thing? Can we come see it? Nobody had really emailed back. And she just brought up, like, she was like, oh, I wish that one place would have emailed me back. I really liked it. But I don't see it anymore. And I was like, oh, well, let's just go look. And so I went on Craigslist and I found it and I emailed them. And like 10 minutes later, they emailed me back and they were like, can you be here at 8 a.m. tomorrow? I can show you.
Wow.
I was like, absolutely. So Ashley and I showed up at our office the next day at 8 a.m. and we met the owner. And so it's actually the backspace to this old Victorian house that is being renovated into a coffee shop / bar.
Whoa.
With food trucks.
What?
So it's kind of the dream.
Oh my gosh. That sounds amazing. We got really lucky.
Yeah. And so so that day we were like, okay, we want it. How soon can we move in? So this was on a Sunday and they were like, well, we need to clean up because it's still like, you know, under construction. Obviously we need to clean up, but you can come on Tuesday.
Wow.
And we were like, okay, let's sign this lease. So we had, I would say, you know, we scheduled the appointment to come see it and we had the lease signed within 24 hours. And we're moved in 48 hours later. So it all happened very quickly.
Yeah.
So the setup is we have two separate rooms in our office. In the larger room is where we do all of like the computer work, the packaging, that sort of thing. We have a TV in here. So, you know, we can kind of relax as well. And then the other room, which is smaller, is what we call our studio. So that's where we do all of the photography. So we don't actually store any inventory in our office. Mm. So what used to be my office at home is now my inventory room, which I actually just outgrew last night and super fun. So probably gonna have to get a storage unit. But I will say it has been absolutely amazing for my business. It has helped my mental health so much. Mm-hmm. I'm not so stressed out. I have somewhere to leave and go in the morning. And things are much more organized. It has helped me a lot as well, just having Ashley in the office, because then we talk about things, you know, we brainstorm together, we motivate each other. Mm-hmm. I just can't, like, it's so crazy because I am such a people person. And that was the most scary thing to me about owning my own business and doing this full time was just being alone all day. Mm-hmm. But now I have Ashley and we get along so great. So it's just, it has helped all around in so many ways that I could have never even imagined. So highly recommend.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you have an amazing location. I mean, before you even told me that there was going to be like the bar and the food trucks, just when you said an old Victorian home, I was like, okay, that's awesome. And then the fact that you have Ashley, which like, this sounds like the most fun office in the world.
Oh yes.
I think it's interesting that you don't keep the inventory on site. So how, you know, do you know the square footage on the office?
Yeah, so I think it's either 4 or 5
okay.
square feet.
Gotcha. So I mean, yeah, it would be between the two of you to store inventory there would be not fun.
Yeah, it would probably be just completely storage at that
right,
point.
Right, right. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So you might it sounds like you're about to outgrow your space at home and get a storage unit for your stuff.
Yes. So I actually had a storage unit before we got the office space. And then I canceled it. So I was like, well, I don't need it now.
Right.
And then like 2 months later, of course, now I need it again. Right. But yeah, I have too much inventory, and kind of the whole root behind the issue is about a week ago, right before Thanksgiving, I was like, okay, I have 2 Z racks full of unlisted inventory. I'm going to photograph and list them all. So I did. And then I realized that I don't have room to store two Z-Racks full of clothing in my inventory system. So so I kind of created that issue for myself. But yeah, probably the next logical step would be to get another storage unit.
Exciting growth.
Yeah, exactly. Well, kind of on a similar note, my next question,
you know, maybe we'll relate to what you just said, or and or you have a different answer for it, which is, you know, what are some of the challenges that you feel like you face in your business right now?
So, like I just said, I don't have enough space. there's the typical, there's not enough hours in the day. That's everybody though. I would say one big issue that I have is that I just consistently feel like I'm working on borrowed ground. And when I say that, I mean, Poshmark is not my platform. They could shut down at any time. Instagram could kick me off at any time. I don't feel like I am 100% stable. And I mean, that comes with any job. You know, your boss could fire you at any time. But so that is kind of where the website comes in and what I'm trying to do with that. So that is, that's an issue, but it's not an urgent issue. And then I would say that the biggest challenge that I'm facing, which is once again, a good problem to have, is I am just scaling so much that I can't keep up with it. So I'm kind of at the point of, needing to hire an employee to have somebody, doing the more, day-to-day things like shipping and listing and sharing, sending offers to likers, that sort of thing that takes up way too much of your time, when there are, you know, other things that you could be doing to grow your business. So I would say I'm kind of at the point of, I can't grow and be consistent. I need help with it. And then, you know, I just feel like I am kind of at the point of needing a next step, and I don't know what that next step is yet. So, I mean, they're all very good problems to have. I have literally nothing to complain about. But I just kind of, I need help, and I need more space, I guess, would be my two biggest issues right now. So I need to actually
you know, it's funny, you're kind of like answering a little bit of each of my next questions in the previous one, which my next question would be, you know, where do you see the future of your business going?
So that would definitely be my own platform. So I actually used to want to build my own reselling app and then quickly realized that I hate technology and that's not an option. But what I would really love is to have a self-sufficient business, to have enough employees to run everything without me having to really be 100% involved day to day. I don't know if that is possible for me personally, because I'm very much a you want it done right, do it yourself sort of person. But you know, I guess I would say that the ultimate dream would be to be able to live overseas for like a year and come back to my business having grown, or at least sustained what it was when I left. So yeah, I mean, just I guess bringing on someone that doesn't want to take my business from me, but wants to help me grow it, would be the next big step to kind of get me to and where I want to go eventually.
You know, I think you said, if you want something done right, you do it yourself. Is that what you said? Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I definitely have that cool thought, but it's tough also when you want to grow your business. So you're kind of stuck in that difficult spot between the two where you're like, I do things right, and I don't want to have to show anybody else because they won't do it as well. Yeah, it's challenging, especially when you've been doing this job by yourself for so many years and you know it so well. You know, it's hard to imagine somebody else coming in and trying to, you know, replicate what you've been doing. So I feel you. I guess that's what I'm saying. I don't have
it's hard to trust other people.
Yeah, it's tough. And I think that there's a lot of people who are listening who probably can relate to that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very much a crossroads, you know, it's, if I want to get any further, then I'm going to have to let that go.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. We're all control freaks about our little business. You know what I mean? And yeah, it's scary. So yes, I feel you there.
Absolutely.
Okay. So
are you tired of spending hours sharing and sending offers to likers? Introducing Posher VA, the web program that will save you time and increase your sales. With Posher VA, you can automatically share your closet, send offers to likers, and schedule your share times all with just a few clicks. Using code ELDUCHO, you can try Posher VA for 2 weeks for free, no credit card required. Posher VA is not just another program, it is your program. Say goodbye to manual sharing and hello to even more time in your business. Try Posher VA today using code ELDUCHO, ELDUCHO.
What advice would you give yourself when you were first starting out?
Yeah. So this one is one that I think about quite a bit. I would say one really big thing for me would have been to take myself a lot more seriously in all of this. And that is to say that, you know, whenever I first started doing this back in 2015, 5 years ago, if I had taken it as seriously as I do now, I don't know where I would be right now, and that would be amazing. And I wish I would have. And then whenever I, you know, like I was talking about, whenever I graduated college, it took me a long time to even accept that this was a real option. And I think that the big part of that was just because I didn't take myself seriously and I didn't take my business seriously. You know, like I said earlier, if you don't take yourself seriously, nobody else is going to. So that is a big part of it. And then this also kind of plays into that, being more confident in the decisions that I make, and the way that I decide to run my business, even when they differ from other people's. And this is a big thing that I kind of harp on whenever I'm talking to newer resellers, because you get on Instagram and it's like, I don't even know how to describe it. Everybody is doing something different, but everybody looks like they know exactly what they're doing and they're doing it perfectly. And no one is. There's not a single person out there that has never bought something that they shouldn't have. And you know, doesn't have a death pile and doesn't, you know. And so, you know, it's just be more confident in being different and running your business how you think would be best and how it works for you. Because I didn't do that at first. I was picking up a lot of more like mature brands like Lafayette 148 and Eileen Fisher and stuff. And that sells great for other people, but it didn't for me. And I didn't understand it. So it's like, everybody else can do it. Why can't I? You know, it took me a while to say, okay, well, I know that I can sell Free People. Why don't I just keep doing that? So I guess that would be, you know, just be more confident in myself and take myself more seriously. And my business would probably be way further than it is right now. But I mean, you know, I feel like everybody can relate to that in some way, shape, or form.
No, I think that that's great advice. And that's, I've had people on who have said similar things in different ways about taking your business more seriously in the beginning. I do think that that's a great piece of advice. And then also, like you said, kind of trusting yourself and your instincts and knowing what you're good at and not getting sucked into the noise of social media, because while it can be super helpful and there's a lot of valuable information or tips or tricks or all sorts of different stuff that you can gather from other resellers, there is no right or wrong way to resell, in my opinion, as long as you're making money. The wrong way is if you're not making money.
Absolutely.
But assuming you're making money, there's so many different ways to do it. And none of our business models are exactly the same. And so, yeah, it's about finding what works for you. And I feel you. There's a lot of stuff that I picked up that people told me to buy, or they didn't tell me, but they told the internet, and I was the internet.
And
boy, do I regret that.
Yes. Well, and you have to remember that, you know, they're only showing you the good things.
Social
they're
media not showing is a highlight reel. Anybody who needed that reminder today, nobody is posting that they lost a bunch of money. Yeah. So no, that's great advice. Thank you for sharing all of that. And thank you for this conversation. This has been so much fun, Shannon. Awesome. Like, I want to stay on the phone with you and talk with you forever, but I know you have an Instagram sale that you have to get to at some point. So I appreciate you taking this time to speak with me.
Yes.
And I will talk to you soon, my friend.
Hey there. Thanks for tuning into the Flip the Script podcast. I wanted to take a quick moment to express my gratitude for your continued support. As a listener, you play a crucial role in the success of this podcast. And there are so many ways you can help out, and I'd love to share a few with you. For starters, you can support the podcast with a monthly donation as low as 99 cents at flipthescriptpodcast.com. Every little bit counts. And if you want to show your love even more, don't forget to subscribe and leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcasting platform. I read every review and really appreciate those who've left reviews already. And last but not least, be sure to check out the affiliate links in the show notes. There is a small kickback that is received from any purchases that you might make. And of course, follow flipthescript.pod on Instagram. It's also a great way to stay up to date on the latest episodes and behind the scenes content. Thank you again for being a part of the Flip the Script community. I couldn't do it without you. Thank you again to Shannon for being on this week's episode of the podcast. I had so much fun getting to know you a little bit better, learning more about your business, and I'm so excited to see the growth that you have in store for your business in 2021. Again, you can find Shannon on Instagram under the username Boho Dreams Closet and on Poshmark under the username Boho_Dreams. I hope you all are having a wonderful start to your December. I hope that if you are doing holiday shopping, hopefully you've accomplished a lot of that by now. If you didn't hear in the beginning of the show, I have started a Patreon group for the podcast where you will get bonus content. So far, that will include a 7th question that I don't include in the podcast. That will change every week. So this week's question that I asked Shannon was about equipment in her reselling business and what she found has been useful and what are items that she wishes she never purchased. So if you're interested in joining the Patreon group and supporting this podcast, it is listener supported. You can do so at patreon.com/flipthescript, and I will have all of this information in the show notes for you. Again, I hope you all are having some wonderful sourcing and some wonderful sales. And in order to do all of that, you've got to keep on listing and keep on selling.